Somebody also raised with me whether Barbados is using a drug called ivermectin that is normally indicative of parasites. They say that it has been reported in scientific journals as having positive outcomes for the treatment of COVID. I suppose, Dr. Larder, can you give us some sense of where the world has been going as it relates to the medicine that is being used to treat COVID? Because we, in all of this, the world has done pretty well in trying to reduce mortality. There are some problems in the United States for sure, but perhaps that has a lot to do with the total scale of the problem that exists there. What are your thoughts?
I haven't heard of the medicine you were talking about. I mean, what I know is that the person to talk to about what's going on the island is Dr. Corey Ford, who is the head of infectious diseases and runs a Harrison Point facility, as far as I know. But the medicines are alleviating medicines, as far as I can understand, like dexamethasone, in situations where people are very, very ill. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem to have been the case with many of the positives, as Anne just said. So there are no specific antiviral medicines, if you like, there are some, but don't really work too well. Remdesivir is one of them. It's a tough nut to crack. All respiratory viruses are quite difficult to try and treat early on with specific drugs. And that's why the focus worldwide has been on vaccines, vaccine development, which is the typical way to control these kind of infections like flu, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to add one more point, because it occurs to me that, and I have no idea whether the ministry are considering this, but in a situation where you have outbreaks, where you really have a lot of people that you want to test very quickly, as I tried to explain earlier on, PCR is a gold standard diagnostic that has to be carried out by experts in a lab, and with specific reagents, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one reason why it takes a long time to actually run and to get results. But there are other more rapid tests that I'm not suggesting should be used as a definitive diagnosis, but they can be used as kind of screens. So the kind of tests that are being used, particularly in the UK, called lateral flow tests, are rapid. They don't need people with medical expertise to actually run these tests, and the result can come back in about 15 to 20 minutes. The unfortunate thing about the test is that they're not very sensitive, so they will miss people who are positive. But people who are very positive, who are wandering around with a lot of virus and they don't know it, which are the people you want to be taking out of circulation, they will flag up. So it's something, I guess, worth considering for the country. If, say, for example, PAHO could supply these sort of lateral flow tests, they're going to be cheaper than PCR and much easier to administer. And I think to get out amongst thousands of people to really get a handle on what's happening in society and in amongst locals today.
Okay, let's take another call. Good morning.
Dr. Wanda. So on the ivermectin question, I had a quick look on the FDA website, and it's not recommended. I mean, there are lots of drugs. We went through the whole hydroxychloroquine episode, but the UK just approved two drugs about a day or two ago. The names are quite, difficult to call, but one of them is tocilizumab and sarilumab, and they're drugs that are used to treat rheumatoid arthritis. But they had a good, in a study, so they did a research study on patients taking these drugs, and I think they've now been approved in the UK. So ivermectin, no, but these two drugs are, just approved. So I doubt that we would, have been using them here. But again, I would refer Barbadians to, the persons treating patients at the isolation facility for those things.
Yes, at some point in the not too distant future, we hope to be joined by one of the government's doctors to add their perspective to this discussion here, because really and truly, it is important to have the doctors from various sides of the fence discussing these issues and looking at, you know, the pros and cons of one or the other and helping to inform the public. So I'm waiting to have that person join us shortly. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Let's take another call.
Yeah, good afternoon. Good morning, I'm sorry, to the individuals there. My question is, but why is all of this happening? If you were to come to me as a Prime Minister in 1980 and say, look, Mr. Prime Minister, we got this virus out there, and if anybody gets it, 100% of the time they will die. It's called HIV. If you get it, you are dead. I'm going to ask them, is it infectious? I mean, are the people going to get it? They will get it. If you break the skin and the blood touch the blood, or the skin touch the blood, you can get it. But once you get it, you will die. And I will say, so is that a reason for me to shut down an economy and go into curfew and to implement all kinds of unusual measures and have people be afraid to go outside of their doors and stuff? You think, and not only that, but to cut half of the people in private life out of work, everybody, and of course the public service still working, and the doctors will still work, and the supermarkets will still open, and all the other people, but entertainment decimated. I should go into that mode for HIV that kills 100% of the people, but really don't infect people outside that don't participate in certain types of activities. No, it's not happening. Okay, all right, I understand. If it comes to the same Prime Minister now with this argument, conjunctivitis. That is spread like mad. I say, but conjunctivitis don't kill nobody. So it's apparent. I should go into mode where I should be shutting down industries. Entertainers can't even find work no more because at 7 o'clock you gotta go home. Entertainment industry is dead. Half of the private sector dead because of a virus that don't kill nobody, that is very infectious. Are you serious?
Oh, you want a response from the doctors to that?
I'm willing to give it a try.
Sure.
I mean, I think the caller, respectfully, you know, if you look at California is a very resource-rich state, right? Right now, people are sitting in ambulances for nearly 8 hours outside of hospitals, right? This goes beyond death rates. People are sitting in, you could have appendicitis, you could have a heart attack, you are outside in an ambulance for hours waiting to get into a hospital, because the burden of COVID infection for those who do not die, that burden on the healthcare system can be so immense if you were to not have any mitigating factors like masks, cleaning, and social distancing. It would decimate the healthcare sector in Barbados. Barbados, look, the doctors at the hospital, the polyclinics, they're doing their best. The nurses, they're already stretched. We just had to bring nurses into Barbados to help with just general care. Can you imagine a scenario like that in Los Angeles or what they had in Italy or in France? Imagine that happening to Barbados. What happens when you let COVID get out of control because you have to live with it, in inverted commas, is that you overrun the hospital so that when your granny has heart failure, she'll end up dying because there's no bed in the QH for her. When your father has a heart attack, he too will die. So the death, while it may not be COVID death in Barbados, it may only, but some people have died, but the rate of death with COVID is not that high. Once you overwhelm the system with people who are sick from COVID, you are now putting people who do not have COVID at risk of death because we don't have doctors, nurses, or beds to care for them. And if your caller cannot grasp that, there's not much else I can say.
If I can just add to that, During the supermarket ABCs and shutdown earlier in the year, the government published numbers of how many numbers there were in each group. From what I can understand, the group of elderly, which is all lumped together, over 65-year-olds, I think, was somewhere around the region of 50,000 on the island. And I think I could be corrected, but my understanding is that's what the government and the Ministry of Health are extremely concerned about, that there's a large group and with of elderly and with comorbidities as well. So there's a lot of the population the government's been trying to protect, and quite rightly so. And I think they're looking at that population in particular and thinking it can't run riot through that population, because even a few percent of those people getting very, very ill or dying, it's going to be a disaster for the country. And I think that's the bottom line.
Okay. Good morning. At 11:39, welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning to your panel.
Good morning.
Yes, I want to find out about this following the science. Because to me, following the science is like you want to put the vaccination on the market fast, or it seems to me it's just for like political and financial gain. So I want to explain what is following the science mean, because I believe we should be following our science. Because a lot of people follow the science, and they still had a lot of mistakes. A lot of mistakes were made outside in a lot of different countries. So I believe we should be following our science and do something now instead of this thing getting out of hand. So I want to hear from your panel what they have to say on this following the science mean.
Okay. What does that really mean?
So I don't know what everybody using the term follow the science may be inferring or hoping that you infer, but I think what it's supposed to be, it means that you're using the scientific evidence available to guide your decisions. But what I would say to you is that, you know, running a country, it's not just, they have to balance things. And I'll give you an example. For example, economy, you can't dismiss economic factors completely, because healthcare needs money. So, you know, and I am not an economist, so I can't inform, I can only speak about the science aspect. But what I do know, though, is that, you know, if the economy goes completely to ruin, then, you know, when you get ill and you go to the hospital, there'll be no medication to give you, because we have no money to buy medication from abroad, because much of this stuff is foreign exchange, et cetera, et cetera. So the balance that the government is trying to achieve, I understand the influences. I would just like to see the meter maybe shift a little, recognizing that you still probably can do this safely. I mean, full tourism and rigorous and aggressive marketing and tourism in the midst of a pandemic might be ambitious. But I think that trying to do it safely, which is what BAMP was suggesting, you know, BAMP never said Barbados must close its borders indefinitely until the pandemic is over. BAMP was pushing for safe opening, and I'm sure the government is pushing for safe opening too. It's just that where they are along an axis is two different positions, and my just opinion is that maybe that meter can move closer towards BAMP, much closer towards BAMP.
Okay, thank you. Down to Brass Tacks. Let's take another call. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Ellis. Good morning to the doctors. I have four questions. Hello?
Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. Are you hearing me?
Yes, we're hearing you loud and clear.
Yes, good morning to the doctors. I have four questions, two for the lady doctor and two for the gentleman. Now, the first question I have, and forgive me if I ask these questions and you might have answered them before, but do you believe... Yeah,
My only difficulty is that I think you should take one question at a time rather than pose all four, because then that creates a problem with people recalling all that you've been asking.
Okay. Well, the first question I have, and I guess any of the doctors could answer this, do you believe that we are experiencing the second wave of the COVID virus? That is one.
So I think if this is interesting, because this is a phrase that we're hearing in the media, in the second wave, and Dr. Fauci spoke of the second wave. But, you know, waves are not inevitable. You know, having the disease is not inevitable. It didn't mean that it is written in stone that everybody will have, you know, a second wave of disease or a third wave, you know. Mm-hmm. What you do in your locale, your island, your country will determine whether you have a second wave. It's not written in stone that Barbados had to have a second wave and this is it. And so therefore we have to throw up our hands and say, okay, well, this was the second wave. Mm-hmm. You know, when people started to experience their second wave, UK went to the second wave around, I guess, just before November, because they shut down again in November. So it may have been August, September, sometime around then. You know, we didn't go into a wave. It's not inevitable. And I think that might be something that people are misunderstanding.
I didn't think that it was inevitable, but I just wanted to know if you felt that we are in the second wave. The second question, should we not be now preparing to unleash what I would call a full-scale COVID immunization program, given that we have these different variants of the virus?
So I think that the government is working assiduously in trying to procure vaccine. These things cost money, and unfortunately, I think I've seen reports that, you know, larger, industrialized, richer nations have mopped up most of the pre-orders of vaccines, etc. So, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that the government is trying to procure vaccines for Barbadians. When and how that happens is, you know, going to be dependent on a lot of factors that are external to us. In terms of the variants, as, you know, Dr. Larder is the expert on vaccines mm-hmm. and stuff, you know, it comes down to how the virus mutates. If we all get vaccinated, and in a country abroad, you know, the virus continues to spread, and so therefore it continues to mutate, you know, the vaccine conceivably might not continue to be as effective. We hope not, but this is entirely possible. So, but I have no doubt. You asked if we shouldn't do it, and I can't say that we aren't doing it. You know, I believe that the government is trying to procure it. In fact, I think that they have spoken about that.
Dr. Larder has also been talking about that a bit, so he could perhaps add to it.
Well, relative to the vaccine, I know what I've heard from the government, and that I also know that the government are procuring vaccines through the COVAX international initiative, and AstraZeneca, who've just had their vaccine licensed in the UK. They subscribe to that initiative, and they have pledged to put in, if you like, hundreds of millions of doses at a capped price of $3 a dose. So I would have thought, in terms of a vaccine that's actually been gone through very rigorous clinical trials, that's going to be high up the list in terms of the vaccine that the government here will be procuring. In terms of time frame, I think you need to ask the government.
Dr. Larder, if I just may ask you quickly, do you know what is the percentage of success of people using homeopathic remedies to treat this COVID virus? Do you know what the success rate has been? That's one. I have one final question for you, but I want to hear you on this.
No to that.
Okay. All right. I noticed that y'all have been answering things that I really have not been speaking to. I have not raised the whole issue of procurement. I ask about an immunization plan, unleashing a full-scale immunization plan. My final question, I guess either of you could answer this. Has the time come for a coordinated regional response, given the fact that there are different strains of this virus, and that in many cases, many Caribbean islands lack the scientific resources to manage these new strains?
Well, I think there is a coordinated regional response, and that's it seems to be coordinated through PAHO, which has been from the very beginning of the pandemic. And just going back to the vaccines, I'm sure the government would like to put in place a large-scale immunisation program tomorrow. It's really going to be the key is obviously going to be procurement of those vaccines and their participation in COVAX, and that having paid into that as well, from what I understand, is heartening and hopefully will speed that process up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you very much for the information and good program. Thank you.
Dr. Brassax, hello.
Good morning. I have one question, and that's it. Good morning, David, and good morning to your guest. I would like to know if there's at least one place in the world where COVID-19 is non-existent.
I think there are a few islands. I think there's a. If you Google it, you'll see a few, maybe small islands where they have, you know, to this point, because it's always to a point. They've probably kept COVID out. I know New Zealand has been very successful in their management of the pandemic, but. You know, it's travel is very extensive, and infectious diseases will thrive in that setting.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the New Zealand example. My understanding is they still have very strict control measures at their border, but they seem to have eliminated up to now the virus from the country.
Question is, what is the secret of their success?
Strong border control. They're extreme. I mean, if you look at the measures of some countries, I mean, once you have it within, it'll multiply and spread, but many people are still maintaining extremely strong border control measures in terms of quarantine and pre-testing. But, you know, it's a balance, I guess, between economies. So if New Zealand can survive well without tourism, I can see that they can continue indefinitely with, you know, strict border controls. Whether we can do that or not, we probably need an economist on the panel.
But in addition, they instigated very, very strict lockdown measures early on. They hit the infection hard and early, and the Prime Minister had to be commended for that.
Absolutely.
And to a great extent, it's worked. So I think that's... The world looks to New Zealand, actually under special circumstances, but they've coped and they've with it very well up to now.
If I may say, David, if I refer Barbadians back to the BAMP protocol, I think I've looked at the science because they were quite good in terms of outlining the scientific literature that the protocol was based on. So that was very helpful for me to like kind of examine what they were saying. And the measures I think that they have suggested would reduce the risk of transmission for, you know, having the borders open down to about, reduce it by 95% to 99%. If we were to adopt, now 99% is not 100%, and nothing in medicine is 100%, but what they were suggesting, and certainly this will decrease the number of people who are willing to come here as tourists, but the measures are conservative enough that it would really reduce the risk of transmission. And I want to raise something that they have, I think it's either protocol number 8 or 9 in the published protocols that they have sent out. And it's something called, they said, surveillance. And they were suggesting, David, that, you know, because if you know that your border can never really be 100% unless it's closed completely in terms of reducing risk of transmission, then, you know, this thing of surveillance, you know, so they were suggesting, I guess, that, you know, in terms of high-risk populations, which we have learned from other countries, you know, care homes, prisons, et cetera, if you were to, say, test, and I look back retrospectively at what happened here in the last 2 weeks or whatever, and I wondered if we had enacted the BAMP protocols, especially the one on surveillance, where you would have gone in and maybe randomly tested, I don't know, 5 prisoners every month or every week. You know, the epidemiologist could tell us when. If we had been testing, you know, a few prisoners, testing healthcare workers, testing, and samples, not all of them, and testing, you know, people in the tourism industry, would we have detected this outbreak sooner? And obviously that would have been a better scenario. So, okay. You know, again, I say, let's have a look at the BAMP protocols.
You're going to have to stick a pin there because we have to go to the regional roundup and return to this discussion in which we are looking at the pandemic, what the world is telling us. We have Dr. Brendan Larder, and we also have a physician whose name is Anne, who is online with us. Good afternoon and welcome to the continuation of this edition of Down to Brass Tacks. We're going to be joined by two other doctors now. We've been hearing so far from Dr. Brendan Larder, a virologist who has been living in Barbados from time to time. He's been visited this country and has had a second home in this country for quite some years now. And we also have a local physician. Her name is Anne. We are joined now by the Acting Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Kenneth George. And we are also joined by Dr. Arthur Phillips. Dr. Phillips, just remind us of your post again.
I'm a senior medical officer.
Okay. In the early part of this program today, one of the significant points raised by these two medical people has to do with information. They suggest that we in Barbados have been getting in recent times inadequate information about in the numbers that are being given by the government. I believe one or other of them would be willing to explain to you what their position is on this. Dr. Larder, perhaps.
Hi, good afternoon. I was really just bringing up the point that in times like this, I feel that clear, concise, and informative communication is key. And it would be nice to see, given the constraints that you've got in terms of the ongoing work, some charts, some figures, trying to pull together what's, to the best of your knowledge, is happening at the moment with the current outbreak. Because that really is very difficult to make to make judgments based on a bunch of numbers, and then just hearing about clusters and that kind of thing. So that would be my plea to you guys.
He went on to say, for instance, that overnight we had an update saying that there were 37 new cases, a mixture of travelers and locals, but that there was nothing more to it. And he felt that if you continue in this vein, there's a danger of creating fear, rumors, and misinformation. So how do you all respond to that?
Well, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak. This is a very fast-moving public health issue that we are challenged in the ministry with. We have endeavored to be very upfront to the public of Barbados with respect to the information that we have, the information that we send out that we try to send out on a daily basis is accurate. We do not give false information or give erroneous information to the public of Barbados. We use a dashboard for communicating information, and in addition to that, we write a narrative every day with respect to what the current situation is. The dashboard that we see it can be improved. The latest statistics are that we have 780 confirmed cases, and it's broken down by male and female. We have included the amount of tests. Barbados is a high testing jurisdiction. And the statistics in isolation is made up of several components. It's made up of persons at the at Blackman Angola, persons in Harrison's Point, there are a few persons in villas, and obviously the load at the prison. And that is the total complement in isolation. So, yes, we can look at better ways to present the results, but we have tried during this epidemic or during this pandemic to be extremely forthright to the Barbadian public. Thank you.